Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. Good morning, Rabbit.
Good morning. Good morning.
Are you excited?
I'm excited. I'm excited because we have a new adventure ahead of us. And we'll be bringing it to you in probably at least two programs, possibly even more, because we're headed to California. California, here we come. You're going to sing that? California, here we come? probably not, huh? But we're going to a region we haven't been to before. Halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco is a vibrant winemaking area called Paso Robles. And On the Menu's headed there for a week.
What does that mean, Paso Robles?
I don't know. I haven't had a chance to. I knew you'd ask me something I didn't know. she has a habit of doing that.
I just
thought I would preview for you some of the things that we're going to be doing out there.
Yeah.
Because we're having dinner at two of the best restaurants in the region. A restaurant called Artisan, which is right in the heart of Paso Robles. And another one called, I'm leafing through papers as I say this, so that I can get to the right page. Oh, the Cass House Inn and Restaurant. We're also going to an abalone farm.
Yeah.
We're going to sample some beef from the Hearst Ranch beef supplier, which I'm assuming must be somewhere near Hearst Castle in San Simeon. So we're going to have fun with that. We're going to taste some local olive oil. And, of course, we're going to taste lots and lots of different wines from the area. The first night, Justin Vineyards, Tablas Creek, and Jay Lore are the featured wineries. And they're all names that if you know California wines, you probably will know. There are literally dozens of names of wineries that I didn't know. That are going to be included in an intensive wine tasting portion of the tour. And then we've got several days where the planning's still going on. So we don't know exactly all the adventures we're going to have, but we just know we're going to have lots of them.
Right.
Lots of farm-to-table cuisine, farmers markets, all kinds of exciting things like that going on in this really tightly wound little community, which has a generation of winemakers that goes back about 25 years. And then new people entering the winemaking business all the time. And we're going to meet everyone, people across that entire spectrum. So we're certainly looking forward to this, and you should look forward to hearing about it too. And, of course, if you've been there already and you have suggestions of places we might go, pop us a message through our homepage and let us know where it is, and we'll make sure that that's included in what we do. There's the people out there, the Paso Robles Wine Alliance and another group, have been really very helpful, and it just seems like a really exciting adventure that's ahead of us. But back to the business of On the Menu Radio today, and we're starting out with a cookbook about baking, but it's a cookbook about baking that's really rather special because the person who wrote it has been a working pastry chef for 33 years.
He started
very young, but he's been doing it for a very long time. He's learned an awful lot, and along the way he's met some interesting people who have advanced his career, including the wonderful and well-known Martha Stewart. So obviously you can expect a fascinating interview, and indeed it turned out to be.
Well, I guess our next guest, John Baricelli, could be said to have baking in his blood. You're a third-generation baker, huh?
Yes.
And you've gone through, where have you not worked? What have you not done? You have the introduction to your book, which is what we're going to talk about today, the Sono Baking Company Cookbook, forwarded by Martha Stewart, who you worked with for quite some time.
I did. It's about 12 years now.
And do you still do your PBS show?
Yes, we're on PBS stations right now. We're in our sixth season on Everyday Food. And we're waiting to do Everyday Baking again. It was quite a success. Trying to get that back on the air.
And now, you opened this current bakery in 2005.
Correct.
And, okay, and it is Baricelli instead of Baricelli?
Yep, Baricelli.
Oh, good. See, you're right. Proper Italian. Well, anyhow, this stuff looks so good. It just makes me, I don't have a sweet tooth, but this really makes me want to cook this stuff. And that's kind of the point of the book, isn't it? I'm amazed. Your writing is so authoritative, but, and it's also so clear. I think anybody could pick it up and learn to bake.
Well, we were very very conscious of the types of recipes. We didn't want to be too intimidating, yet we wanted to be sophisticated enough so we didn't have a boring-looking another cookie and biscotti book. So, we were very cautious at the recipes that we chose to put in the book.
Right. And you anticipate that this will be usable by both beginners and also more experienced bakers?
Absolutely. There are some things in there that take 2 or 3 days to make. The croissants, for instance, if you follow the recipe verbatim. I mean, there's things that are simple that can be done in a half an hour with the kids, drop cookies and the such. There's even some simple apple tart. Yeah, so we think that we've accomplished something that would be good for both the novice baker and the professional.
And this is something you do every day, right? I mean, you come to work at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Absolutely, yeah. Generally here, the last couple of weeks my schedule's been off because of all these events that we've been doing. The book's only out a week now, and we've been doing a lot of radio shows, stuff like you guys, the webcasts, library tours, and bookstore tours. So, yeah, we've been a little off-kilter, but generally, like tomorrow morning, I'll be here at 1:15. We have a very, very busy day tomorrow. Bunch of farmers markets and also the regular store and wholesale, cafe, and catering. we keep our wheels moving all the time.
Now, what's in the cafe? I mean, I'm assuming that you're talking about the bakery as a retail bakery outlet.
We are a wholesale retail bakery, so we have a full bakery line. We do artisan bread. We have a breakfast and lunch menu, which encompasses most of our bread. We do paninis. Soups, salads, everything's made in-house. Very high quality for the price. I think our sandwiches average in the $8 range. But again, everything's made on our sourdoughs or our whole grains or multigrains. So we're very health conscious with our sandwiches. We try to keep things on the smaller portion size. Our desserts are fantastic. We have a 6-foot showcase for refrigerated desserts, a 4-foot showcase for our breakfast pastries, and then we have about 6 feet of bread display for all of our artisan bread.
All right. Now, do you have an online store?
No. We don't like to ship because it's just not conducive to our product. We love to go to farmers markets. We go to New Haven 3 times a week, which is about a half an hour away. It's a major city, very, very popular food city. We go to Westport, and then we're here in Norwalk. So we travel so we can get our product out to people, but we don't ship. If you look at the product that's in the book, could you imagine trying to ship that raspberry cheesecake?
No, there's that wedding cake lady in Manhattan.
She actually hands delivers them. DHL and her have an agreement, and somehow she gets it done. I guess we could try it, but we don't want it. We don't freeze anything here, so I don't know why we would want to freeze anything to ship it.
Well, she could get her.
We got two half dozens of cupcakes the other day that came frozen.
Yeah, so there you go. That's the only way to do it, because if the box gets tipped over, then they stick to whatever packaging you have, and then when you open it up, it's just a mess.
Well, it was very heavy.
They were here for a few days before we got at them, so we were at the
icing. We were away.
Mostly we were at the icing, not the cake.
Yeah.
I mean, it just can't be the same thing. I mean, a week-old cupcake, even if it's been frozen.
Yeah, that's not our product. We bake. We don't freeze. We bake. We don't even have a freezer, per se. I mean, we have a drop chest freezer for, like, our frozen fruit. But we don't use, we're not that kind of bakery that produces for the freezer. We produce for the store for our clients. Our clients know that our product is baked and delivered. It's not baked and stored or baked and put in the refrigerator. It's just baked and delivered, and that's the best way.
Right. Now, do people come to you from fairly far away? I mean, presumably Fairfield County, Connecticut's not that far away.
Yeah, no, we have a very, very large following. So, we're one of those businesses that does much better Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We need a little help on the Tuesdays, Wednesdays. We're actually a destination. We're pretty much off the beaten track. We're in an old warehouse district. You kind of have to know where we are, where our parking is and stuff. But the people that live in the area, they know where we are. And we have a good following.
You're a superstar.
You know, I don't know what I can correlate to being on TV or the book or just being a good bakery. It's hard to... I think it's a combination of all three. Yes, I think the TV helps the business. But if you know on Everyday Food, we're not allowed to cross-promote anything. So unless you knew I had a TV show, I don't really think anybody would know that it was the Sono Baking Company. Same as, the book, obviously, they didn't want to put the name in the book at first, but then they realized that we had no choice. But it wasn't going to be called the Sono Baking Company cookbook. It was just going to be, you know, everyday baking from John Baricelli. And I said, I don't think that's the best thing for my business.
No, I don't think it's not going to sell nearly as many books.
Exactly, right. So we sell the book here in the stores. We sell it at our farmers market. We've already sold within the week, 10 days, we've already sold about 300 copies. So we're doing okay selling the book ourselves.
I'm sure it's doing well online, too. It's on our OTM bookshelf, and I can't remember where it ranked in the... Amazon gives a number ranking as to where you are.
Yeah, we were number one for a couple of days.
That must have been putting it up on the website. Then I thought, boy, this book must be really good.
yeah, and the more important number is that other number. What's the number? The overall number was like down in the 144 number.
That's pretty good.
It's just unbelievable. So yeah, you've been doing very well. Thank you.
You're aware of how many? I mean, because we get books daily. You're aware of how many baking books are out there.
I see the ones that are above 500,000 in the Amazon rankings.
we're back down now. We were up in the 500. Now we're down to 479 bestsellers.
Well, it keeps on moving. It's going to keep on moving.
Number three in desserts. So we're doing very well on Amazon.
It's going to keep on moving around for sure.
Yeah, I hope it's around for a while. I'd like to go to a second printing. I hear that's when you make money.
Well, let's hope so.
I mean, I do know cookbook authors who make money with cookbooks. I don't know. A lot of people don't, actually.
Yeah, you know what? Like I said, we did it to help business. Like I said, we're in a tough neighborhood as far as destination goes. Anything to help the business. You know, TV's going to end one day. The book can continue to do. I think I have at least two or three more books in me. I would love to do a follow-up book with Clarkson Potter. They're great publishers.
They got some good books, too.
They really do.
What would your follow-up be?
I'm looking at, because of the farmers markets and how involved we are with the local growers, I'm looking at doing a book about baking with fruit. And I think my concept would kind of a chapter of strawberries and, you know, maybe 10 recipes of strawberries and 10 recipes of, we have these local plums that are just unbelievable.
Oh, I saw this plum tart, is it? No, it's plum.
Yes, that's it. We did those with the local plums. They're
fabulous.
Just phenomenal.
Absolutely fabulous.
We do a plum pizza. We do so many different things with the fruit, for the local fruit. We have fantastic Concord grapes here in the fall.
There's a Monica's Pies. That's the first time I ever had a Concord grape pie.
Yes, very popular.
You know her, Monica's Pies. I can't remember.
I don't know Monica's Pies, but I know Martha. We did a grape pie for Martha Stewart, and it came out very well.
Now, this has to help you, your association with Martha Stewart, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, we met on a professional level. She always admired my ice creams and sorbets, and it continued my cooking. I was actually her private chef when I worked for her, in addition to my regular job responsibilities. But I would travel to her homes and make dinner for her and her guests. And so, you know, when you're taking a private plane with her and you're hobnobbing with Barbara Streisand and, you know, her husband, and you're meeting all these famous people, and it takes a certain person to just kind of blend in and not stand out. And I think she always admired me because I wasn't one of those gawkers that would, like, just stare at Barbara Streisand.
I would stare.
She's just another person. Yes, she's famous and has a lot of money. But, you know, hey, I'm a chef and I'm there to cook for them. And that's how, you know, I approach the situation.
Now, Peter asked you off air, but I don't think you can tell the truth what you really like.
You know what? She's been very, very good to me and my family. She insisted that I do the book. She insisted that she write the foreword. She insisted that she put me on the air the day, which is when it's shot up to number one.
But she's not temperamental and demanding?
Of course, but who isn't? Is Donald Trump any less? He's a man, he doesn't get the bad rap. I hear more horror stories about that guy. He doesn't pay bills, this, that, and the other thing. You know, I mean, we hear it because we're here on the East Coast. You're going
through a list of all our favorite people here.
Yes, I know.
maybe you can give us the inside scoop on Dick Cheney.
I want my hair to look like Donald's one day.
Oh, I hope not.
Yeah, I know. It's horrible.
You
could hear horror stories, and like I said, I hear horror stories about Martha, and it's just, you know, to me, and I'm speaking for myself, wonderful woman, never did wrong by me. Yes, she's yelled at me in the past. Yes, she's been hard on me, but at the same time, I feel that she's been more than gracious. She's even given me her homes for the weekend. Well, who does that?
What did you use it for?
If I said to her, Martha, I'm going up to Maine with my family, she'd give me a house.
Oh, that's great.
Stay at the house. Yeah, go stay there. Nobody's there. You know, I shouldn't say nobody's there. She's got a staff of 12. She's got to keep them busy, you know.
Yeah, she might as well keep them on their toes. Huh?
Exactly.
Well, you sound pretty cool yourself, John, and I wish I could just get these goodies without having to bake them, actually.
Yeah, but well, you know what? Listen, we had a nice gathering last night at WSHU, which is a classical station here, public radio. We had a very nice group there, and I said to them, somebody said, is the book approachable? And I said, think of it like an IKEA bookshelf. If you have all the stuff laid out in front of you and you follow the instructions and you have good equipment, and I'm not talking exceptional equipment, just saying good equipment, you'll get the job done. And it's really quite that simple. Yes, you have to weigh things and measure, but that's what baking is. So you can't imagine somebody just trying to put flour, sugar, and eggs in a bowl and come out with a vanilla cake. You know, it just doesn't work like that. So there is some science to it, but I encourage people to bake with the kids, get them involved. This is what I think is the resurgence in the baking books business, is that the fact that a lot of people are staying home and baking these days.
And you grew up that very way, right? You grew up cooking with your mom or your dad?
Well, I lost my mom when I was in third grade. She died of natural causes when she was 41 years old. Ooh. Probably having eight boys didn't help. But I remember certain things with her. I remember certain things with my dad. I remember certain things with my grandparents. So I was in the Culinary Institute right after my 17th birthday. I was one of the youngest kids to ever enter the school. So I was finished with the CIA before I was 20 years old, out in the field working, the Helmsley Palace, the Pierre Hotel. And so I don't have as many memories of cooking at home as I do as cooking when I was 17, 18, 19
years old. Yeah, because you've been doing it such a long time already.
Exactly. It's 33 years already, so...
Yeah, you're young. I mean,
I'll turn 50 this year. So
you look younger.
Well, happy birthday.
You know what? It's the stress. It keeps me looking young. That's what I tell everyone.
you think that's what it is? Huh?
We have 22 employees, and they all get paid first.
I'm sure they do. We're already looking forward to the second installment of your contribution to the world of baking books. I wish we lived closer.
Thank you very much, and hopefully you guys will come out. You guys hockey fans at all?
Not really.
Yeah, I was going to say, but Pittsburgh's got a great team.
We've been supposed to be in Westport, Connecticut for about 4 or 5 years now, visiting Michel Nichard at the restaurant that he and Paul Newman ran together.
Yeah, Michel's a very dear friend.
We love him.
They used to be a good customer of ours, but business is not doing as well as I think he would like. I think once Paul disappeared, I think business kind of disappeared also. But he's still, his book is out. How's his book doing?
I honestly don't look at the numbers. I see the number.
Which is this, his third book or the second book?
I see the number when it goes up on our website. After that, I don't really follow it. I mean, I see sales that come through the bookshelf.
Yeah.
But I don't. There are so many books. It's always nice to find one that's really outstanding, and the Sono Bakery book is certainly one of those.
Fantastic. Well, I appreciate you guys taking time out.
And I want one of these Trapezien.
Trapezien. That's from the Saint-Tropez region of France.
I want that.
Yeah, isn't it awesome? That's another thing you can do with brioche.
She's going at the page with a knife and fork.
Look at the back cover with a stack three high. Did you see it?
Oh, yes.
In the back, second or third page. So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
We had some fun with that Trapezien. And again, you know, it's funny how you say, how's Martha? Martha hated that dessert. Everybody loves it. She hated it. So, you know, you can't please everybody with everything. But she's not
Well, she likes your breads a lot, she said.
Yeah, she's a big bread fan.
And I think before we conclude this, we should make sure that everybody understands that it's not just desserts. You also have very strong breads and savory baking in here.
Yes, we do awesome empanadas. We do great chicken pot pies.
I'm looking at the chicken
tomato
pot pies.
You know, if you ever get a chance, I don't know if you guys get good tomatoes out there. I'm sure you do.
We grow them ourselves.
Oh, there you go. Try, if you get the little cherries, like the assorted cherry tomatoes, mm-hmm. and little baby plum tomatoes, that tomato cobbler that
I'm just looking
there,
at that, too.
Absolutely drop dead. It's gorgeous.
I love it. I look
very
at it.
Very edible. Very, very. You can alternate the cheeses, whatever cheese you like. That, to me, is a September, October. That and a good loaf of bread to soak up the juices from the tomatoes. That's all you need for dinner.
That sounds good to me. Oh, that sounds fabulous. Well, John, it's nice meeting you, and I wish you all sorts of success with this beautiful, beautiful book.
Yep, you got my direct line, so anytime you guys want to talk, you don't have to go through my publicist. You can call us here.
Okay, and chat.
If you have a question, let us know, and okay, we'll try to answer it.
Very good. And keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and let me know if Giant Eagle keeps bringing people in. If you ever get to come to Pittsburgh, let me know.
Thank you, I will. And also, if you ever come to Westport, we're about 2 miles away.
Okay, well, that sounds good.
Ciao. Thank you.
Bye. And now I'm sure it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. We're in constant communication with all you people out there. I think the whole world's in constant communication these days, don't you?
Yeah, I think the world is happening to be that kind of place, that's for sure.
Did you see, though, that they, twice now, Twitter has managed to avert suicides?
You mean suicides because of Twitter or suicides on Twitter? Or?
People who were going to kill themselves, young people. And the people that they, Demi Moore was one of them. She has thousands on her side, I do believe. But they managed to notify the police, and the police went to the address of this person, two different times, and actually got the people help. It's really interesting.
It's really interesting.
But that really doesn't have anything to do with On the Menu. But you know what? It's a healthful direction of social media.
Yes, it is.
And now we have something exciting as a new entrant into the interesting, healthful new ingredients, although it's not new, it's old.
Oh my! Aren't you going to become totally infatuated, indoctrinated, certainly educated about an exciting redevelopment of a product that's been known since ancient times, and a surprising entrant into On the Menu Radio? Someone who's producing this product in a modern way. 10,000 miles away in Adelaide, South Australia.
Of all places,
And a truly fascinating fellow with a fascinating story to tell.
Every so often, On the Menu finds a product that just turns their head around and sends me into all kinds of hallelujahs. And we have one of those hallelujah moments. A product called Frika. Am I pronouncing it correct?
Yes, you are. Hallelujah.
Yeah. Now, we're talking to the, I don't know how you describe, you're the, what would you describe yourself as? The discoverer of Agile, though it's a classic ancient product, and the commercial production process, right? And
yes,
you're in
right.
charge of the company. This is Tony Lufti. And you're going
right.
to tell us, first of all, you're calling us from Adelaide, is it?
Adelaide, Australia. That's
in
right.
Australia, because that's where the production is. Explain to our listeners, first of all, that interesting story, how you discovered Freak.
Well, although some people think that I've been around for quite some time, but I certainly wasn't around when it was discovered 4,300 years ago. I understand that the story of it was that there was a walled city in the East Mediterranean somewhere on the modern southern border of Turkey. And the inhabitants of that walled city had an enemy marching against them from ancient Mesopotamia, Babylon. And they feared that they would lay a siege to their city, so they went to harvest the crops, which at the time, of course, used to be grown outside of the walls of the city, and discovered that their wheat was still green, was not quite ripe to harvest. And I guess they figured, well, we better eat the green grain than nothing. So they cut the heads, brought them inside and stored them in a corner of the city. Anyone who knows what happens to grain when you store them, particularly when they are green, the enzymes are active, the temperature increases, and of course in the middle of the day the heads wilt and dry, and that becomes the fuel, so they caught fire. And when they went to see what happened to their stored crop, which just burned, they discovered that the outside of it was charred black, but when they rubbed the husk away, they exposed the green grains, which didn't burn, and tasted absolutely beautiful. And so they called the product Frika. That's where the word comes from, and it comes from the Aramaic language, which is the parent language of both Arabic and Hebrew, the language of the Jews.
Does that mean anything, Frika, Tony?
Yes, it does. What it means is that it's the rubbed one. That's the actual translation, word for word, by Frika. It's the rubbed one, because they had to rub the husk away to expose the grain. And that's how it was discovered many thousands of years ago, 4,300 years ago.
You rediscovered it.
Yeah. I mispronounced your name. It's Lutfi. How do you
pronounce
it? Oh,
that's fine. I've been called worse names.
No.
And that's all right.
Okay. Lutfi.
I rediscovered Frika. Well, actually, to be very honest, I was invited to have a meal of Frika. Years ago, in 1988, I spent 2.5 years as an advisor to a foreign government on investment and investment attraction. And one day I got invited by a senior member of that government who served something that I never had before, and it tasted absolutely wonderful, and it was served with chicken and lamb, all kinds of wonderful salad, pine nut raisin. And it was absolutely stunning in taste, and I asked what it was, and the guy said to me that it was called Frika, and it's a seasonal product made out of the green grains, but he jokingly said to me that I was very lucky to eat it in his house, because normally the traditional Frika, which is effectively a peasant food, in most of the time in farm or consumed by the farmers in farm with a little bit of commercial production, was very heavily contaminated with stones and rocks and dirt and all kinds of stuff. And he used to, and he said to me that normally during the Frika season, dentists have a big smile on their face and cup their hands with glee, waiting for new customers. So,
you know, this is true. Black beans. A friend once said you have to sort through, a Cuban friend, you have to sort through all of the dried ones you buy, black beans, even the ones that are packaged commercially, and sort through all the rocks and stone. And it's true. Every single package has at least a few of them.
Well, this is a fascinating, sort of like a detective story. So you tasted this. Now,
I tasted it. I loved it. And this friend of mine, or a person who invited me to eat it, jokingly said to me that, look, if someone ever developed a modern technology process to make Frika free from stones and rocks and to make it more commercial, they'd make a bundle of money. Now, of course, I developed that. I haven't seen the money yet, but hopefully one of these days we'll make it. But, yes, and the other thing that was quite interesting is that over many, many years, thousands of years, obviously, people who consumed it knew that it was very healthy. They didn't know why, but they knew it was good for you.
Well,
and
explain that part of it, because you have had scientific, you've published scientific results, or other people have published scientific results about that. It's nutrition.
Yes, that is true. In fact, the more we research this, the more fascinating it becomes. It's one of those things that I... let me just put it into perspective. My background's got nothing to do with grain. I'm a mechanical engineer. I'm a graduate of the Colorado School of Mines in petroleum and mineral engineering and mineral economics, and I have an MBA and an MIM, a Master's in International Management, specializing in transnational law, so I'm probably as far from the farm as you can get. I became extremely fascinated in this due to the technology aspect of developing the actual process, the modern process, which we developed here in Australia. And then I became quite interested in the research, which we've conducted with some major internationally recognized organization, medical centers, and an organization in Australia called CSIRO, which is the Commonwealth Scientific Investigative Research Lab organization. It's a fairly highly recognized globally organization owned and funded by the Commonwealth Federal Government of Australia. Now, some of the findings were initially simple. We discovered the nutritional composition of the product is extremely high. It's rich in protein, rich in good fatty acids, no saturated fats, but good fatty acid profile. It is a low-fat food. It's a low-carb food. And this is quite interesting, because if you look at the total carb content of paprika, which is the grain when it's green, versus the same carb content of the same grain when it matures, the total carb content is similar. However, the carb profile is very, very different. When it's green, it's extremely high in fiber, and it's extremely rich in what they call resistant starch. Now, resistant starch, RS, is probably a reasonably recent and new concept, but it is a starch that is part of the carbohydrate profile but does not get digested in your stomach. And what became really interesting about that part is the research that we conducted with the CSIRO and the Flinders Medical Center, which found that as you eat the freca, the grain goes in the stomach and it does not break down the starch, so it's a low carb. That resistant starch doesn't convert into sugar and so on, and it passes intact to the colon. Now, before your body expels it, what it does is it tries to break down that resistant starch again in the colon and increases the production of a very important short-chain fatty acid in the colon called butyrate. And the increased production of butyrate has been associated in a lot of research throughout the world with diminishing the risk for colorectal cancer. And that was the first indicator that it may be beneficial for cancer. So then we took the research further into research with medical organizations here at the Flinders Medical Center, which is part of the Flinders University in the state of South Australia. And what they've done is they have effectively conducted a research on rats, where they fed the rats with various diets of one would be freca for 1 week, and then barley for another rat barley for 1 week, and a third with mature wheat from the same variety as the freca in another third rat, and so on. So they actually compared the freca with rice, barley, triticale, mature wheat, and the control diet. And what they found is that the mice that, or the rats that consumed the freca had what they call an apoptotic effect, which meant that when they injected a carcinogen to see how the body of the rat would react to it, in the case of all the other mice consuming the other grains, what happens is the damage to the DNA in the cells in the colon occurred, and then those damaged cells mutated and formed a tumor, and then from there the tumor became cancerous. Whereas in the case of the rats that consumed the freca, other than the increased production of butyrate, they discovered that the apoptotic effect which existed meant that the body was expelling, the freca was expelling the cells with damaged DNA. So those cells never got to mutate and turn the in tumors and cancer. Now, of course, this is still in the early stages.
Yeah, now you have this information for people who really want to delve into this. This would be on your website, all these studies, right?
Yes, all of these studies.
And why don't you give us that website address so that people who really want to explore the health benefits of it and all the scientific studies can read them. What is the website?
Yes, it's www.greenwheatfreca. I'll spell that. It's green as in the color, G-R-E-E-N, wheat as in the grain, W-H-E-A-T, freca, freekeh.com.au. And if a person does a Google search for freca in any sort of way they spell it, they will be able to get to our site. Now, there are a whole other benefits that we also uncovered. They include the fact that we conducted research on the benefits of freca for combating diabetes, and the CSIRO found that not only it is low GI, but it has actually an excellent insulin response, which is quite important in combating type 2 diabetes in particular, and it has also some very strong prebiotic effects with very large numbers of bifida bacteria and lactobacilli, and of course it has a fairly strong antioxidant effect with particular benefits resulting from a good content of zinc, iron, so on. So quite a lot of antioxidants also available in this particular grain because it is green and still young. So
now the other thing about it, let's not just worry about the science here because there's lots of science. The wonderful part about it is it really tastes good.
I know.
It's actually so strange that
it ought to taste like cardboard. It ought to be taste like cardboard and be indigestible.
But it's fabulous.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And by the way, I mean, we definitely believe that the reason why it has survived the test of time, 4,300 years is quite a long time. The reason why it survived it more than anything else is not the health benefits. I mean, let's face it, the reality is people love it because of its taste.
Right.
And its versatility.
Yeah, now tell us ways of using it. I mean, you can use it, you already mentioned something like, almost like a couscous, right?
Oh, no. It's a hell of a lot better than couscous and easier to use than couscous in some ways.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't recognize, and this is not to take anything away from couscous, but a lot of people don't recognize that couscous is really nothing more than pasta.
It's pasta.
Whereas this is 100% natural grain.
I'm just asking you to suggest ways people can cook and eat it.
Well, I'm sure there are lots of good recipes on the internet. What we did,
I like it even plain.
We did the simple microwave method, which is add some water, some olive oil, some salt, and put it in the microwave for about 10 or 12 minutes and serve it as a side dish, and it was just wonderful.
And I even ate it cold. I mean, yeah. I could eat it every day.
I have a feeling we might be having some tonight. Now, how do people get some?
All right. But can I just go ways of the recipe as well, Peter, if I may, and then I'll get back to the other question.
Sure.
It really is quite simple. I actually have it as a breakfast cereal, and as a breakfast cereal, it's wonderful. I use generally the whole grain. The whole grain takes longer to cook than the cracked grain. The cracked grain cooks in about 10 to 12 minutes, whereas the whole grain cooks in about 30 minutes. It's more like the brown rice. It's a bigger grain, so it takes longer to cook and soften. And the beauty about the whole grain and the cracked grain is that even though they're the same grain, but they really taste different, and the texture is very, very different. And with the whole grain, I make it in a breakfast cereal. I just cook the grain, and while it's cooking, I chop an apple, and I put it in a little pot with 1 teaspoon of water and add a little bit of cinnamon and some sultanas or raisins or whatever dried fruits you want, and just stir it together for about 1 minute. And then when the fridge, mix the grain and the fruit together and just put it in the fridge, and it'll last for about 10 days. And what I normally do is in the morning in the winter, I take 1 scoop of the mixture and put it in a bowl and add a little bit of milk, put it in the microwave for about 30 seconds, then take it out and put a dollop of vanilla yogurt and put some walnuts on top.
Oh.
And it tastes so yummy. And in the summer, I just take it and mix it with the yogurt and the nuts, and it really tastes wonderful. But in addition to that, you can have it in salads. We've got beautiful salad recipes. We've got soup recipes and so on. One of the nicest ways do it is to cook cracked grain and mix it with ground beef and use it like burgers. It is absolutely stunning and yummy, and I think one of these days some of the big organizations in the world that sell burgers will discover this, because what we discovered, and this is quite an amazing thing, it combines taste and health. We actually make a Frika burger, which is 45% lean beef with about 45% Frika with the rest of herbs and spices. And basically what you do is, if you normally buy a burger in one of the major burger companies, it normally contains anywhere around 27% fat content. The stuff that you buy on the shelf in the supermarket that's ready-made, or cooked or uncooked, range between 18 and 22% fat content. The stuff that you actually make at home using the ground beef yourself depends on the cut of beef and how much fat it contains, but generally it's between 11 and 15% fat content. Now, this burger that we made not only tastes absolutely stunning, it's only 2.7% fat content. So if you mix the meat with the ground beef with the Frika, the cracked Frika together, as I said, 50-50 to the tune of 45% and 45%, and then a little bit of herbs and spices to give it better taste as well. and grill it. It is absolutely stunning and very healthy. So there are lots and lots of ways
now,
to use
Tony,
the frika, and we also have frika flour.
Tony, when you're doing what you just described, do you cook do you use cooked frika to do it, right?
Yeah, you need to rehydrate it.
Yes.
Yeah, may I suggest that he has brochures of recipes and recipes on the website as well?
Yeah, we know that. I think we do.
So, I mean, it's easy for people to get. But so we all are in love with this already. Yeah, well, we are. Now, I am. You know I am. How you have released it someplace. You've distributed it somewhere. I forget where you said it was. And you're about to release it for distribution in the United States, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So where all can you get it?
We have currently a small shipment. I'm not sure, but your listeners probably know that there was a program in the United States on television. I believe it's Dr. Oz and...
Yes.
And so on, and featured the product. And we didn't have distribution in the United States. We've been selling our product throughout the world to many countries, but...
Well, the listener range will go across... will be global because it's Internet, so you can probably tell people in different areas where they can get it.
Sure. You can get it certainly from our website. You can order it. We have a shop on our website, and we currently export to a number of countries, including Japan, Hong Kong, Singapore, and the UK, as well as quite a few Middle Eastern countries. And right now, we have a shipment on the water heading to the United States. Should arrive in about 3 weeks' time. And we've got a distributor who will initially handle that. We're looking to increase, obviously, sales and distribution in the United States. And people in the United States right now can order from our website, again, www.greenmeatfrika.com.au. And we will deliver, once the shipment arrives in the U.S., we will deliver from that shipment directly to their door. I believe that there is a handling and shipping charge because it will be shipped from the U.S. directly to them initially to their home for about $14 beyond the actual cost of the grain. So we are extremely excited. We've got some product on the way, and people can order it from our website, but as the shipment arrives and it arrives in the U.S. and then it goes into the various stores and shops in the U.S., they should be able to hopefully buy it from supermarket, gourmet and health stores and so on, but that hasn't yet happened. And I guess our distributor in the U.S. will organize that. We're currently next week exhibiting in the food show in Anaheim, California.
That's the health food.
Hoping.
Natural foods?
Is that the natural food?
Yeah, yes, I keep telling you, bring it to New York in July for all the specialty food products.
Well, we may well do that. You know, this whole thing caught us off guard because we've been trying to bring the product to the United States for a long time, and most people, distributors, weren't too terribly enthused by it for some reason or another. I think most of them thought, well, it's got a different. I guess the conditions also changed in the United States in the last 10 years. So more people are looking for wellness and health and taste.
Look at antioxidants and how they've taken off. Yes, I mean
there's no question that the target, the number one target for your U.S. distributor has to be whole food markets. It will fly off the shelves.
Right. And not only that, I can walk there every day and get some more.
this is a fabulous story brought to you all the way from Adelaide, South Australia. It's where it's tomorrow already. Tony, thank you so much for joining us, and I think you're going to sweep the planet with this.
Well, sounds good. I think I'm glad to say that we're a little bit ahead of you at this stage. But please catch us.
Oh yes. Well, I'm very excited for you and about the product. And anything else? You make flour as well. Anything else in the tube yet?
In terms of the
product.
Television program?
No, the product.
In terms of product, yes, we've got pasta in development. We've got frika crackers. We've got a range of frika breads. I mean, we haven't even touched in our discussion the freak of flower aspect of it. So, yeah, it lends itself beautifully. Okay. there are plenty of, as I said, there are plenty of uses for it. We're even looking at the potential of developing a freaka couscous. And, of course, you can make the freaka, because it's important to point out that it is not a variety of grain, it is a process. And we're looking now, we're developing freaka not only from wheat, but we're developing it from barley, triticale, and other grains.
Oh, see, that's interesting, Yeah, you did mention that.
The potential of transferring the technology to the United States and making it from a variety of products in the United States for the U.S. and North American market, and its benefits to farmers, because it benefits the farmers immensely, and also to the environment, because it doesn't require the use of chemicals, particularly at the end of the season, to protect the grain from pests and stuff like that. And, of course, that reduces the cost to the farmer, and it reduces the risk to the farmer, because you take the grain early before the end of the season, so it doesn't need to be exposed to too much rain or too little rain and so on. So the benefit to the farmer of this technology and the benefit to the environment of the use of the technology are also tremendous.
Now, one day, Tony, I'm sure we're going to see this for ourselves. We've been to Adelaide before. This is another reason for us to go back to your absolutely charming city. And thank you so much for joining us. We need to cut away now, because we have to make freaka for dinner. And we're recording out of the normal on the menu recording hours in order to be able to make the time zone connections we have. We thank you so much for getting up early on Tuesday and talking to us. And we wish you great success. And I'm sure you'll keep in touch with us and let us know all the freaky news.
The freaka news.
And freak out with freaka tonight.
Yeah, we will.
Thank you very much.
Tony, love it. Love your product, and you're a delight. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Well, you know, we will be continuing to monitor this product. Particularly, I will let you know when it finally gets to this marketplace.
You should certainly go out of your way to get some. But now it's time to take a break. In fact, you might even say it's time to take a rest.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, here we are again. I'm not sure how I'm going to handle this next transition from roasted green wheat to vinaigrette. But there you have it. I just did that.
Well, yeah, you did that. You did that. Not terribly smoothly, but you did it.
Yes.
But there's a story behind the story. There always is it on the menu, as I'm sure you realize if you're a regular listener to the program. We love it when we find really heart string pulling stories.
Yeah, or just interesting backstories for everything that happens. I mean, I think that's, and we run into an awful lot of these mompreneurs.
Mompreneurs?
Yeah. As opposed to entrepreneurs.
Oh, is that what it's called? Well, in this case, I think it was a total new correction.
Yeah, that's true.
A total course correction in a career that was involved in other things altogether to do with healthcare.
Have her mother's vinaigrette, right?
Yes, but after an episode of ill health that would have stopped most people from wanting to do anything, this lady said no. Nita Weiss said, or Nita Weiss, I think, said, no, I'm going to do what my friends always said I should do, which is to capitalize on the wonderful recipes that were handed down in salad dressings and marinades from our family.
Why don't you let her say it?
So she created a whole new business, and we should let her tell her own story, shouldn't
right.
we?
We met so many fun and interesting people in the Charleston Food and Wine Festival, not the least of which is Nita Weiss, who has a wonderful company
called Nita's Charleston Vinaigrettes and Marinades, and the company has not only good products, but an interesting story. Welcome to On the Menu, Nita.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate your interest in my product and
yeah.
my story.
Yeah, well, I was drinking some of that vinaigrette from the bottle. It's very good.
So let's do the story. You had the what you might call the opposite of an aha moment. You had a Saul of Tarsus on the way, road to Damascus wake-up call. Tell us about it.
In June of 2005, I experienced and survived a major heart attack, and I ended up being transported to ER. On the way, was flatlined 3 times and had to be defibrillated 10 times.
So, oh, wow.
So at any rate, after I had a week in the hospital and in a coma and woke up and started the recovery process, a friend of mine who came to visit me while I was in my fuzzy robe and slipper mode, who I was in a supper club with, had suggested that I use recovery time to bottle a family recipe that I had been giving out for years in recycled wine bottles. And it was my mother's salad dressing vinaigrette. My father would use it as a marinade. So,
now you had a day, before all this happened, you had a regular day job?
Yes. I had, ironically enough, worked for the American Heart Association's national headquarters.
Oh, wow.
Oops.
A VP of marketing for them for their defibrillator program. And
this is distinctly sounding like you were distinctly careless, Nita.
I used to sell cardiovascular pharmaceuticals. So,
oh, my goodness gracious.
Yes, and worked for a hospital system or two as well. So, yes, my previous life, prior to going into specialty food products, was pretty much in marketing and communication for health in the healthcare arena.
So you had one product already, which is the red wine vinaigrette we're enjoying right now.
Well, actually, the original version was garlic, which is what we launched. And 6 months after I had that out on the shelf, Dean and DeLuca picked it up in New York and then D.C. and Kansas City and in Charlotte. And then 9 months after that, or 9 months after I launched the product, it was picked up by Whole Foods here in the South. So I have some very nice clients around the country. I'm a very small company and based here in Charleston. My product is made locally, though we are starting to do some co-pack might take me out of South Carolina for production.
So you had to learn a whole new trade.
Yes. It was like Gidget goes to the food industry. It has been fun. It's been exciting. It's been never a dull moment, and I've probably worked longer and harder working for myself than I ever did in corporate environments.
That's always the case, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So the joys of being an entrepreneur, and they are. There's satisfaction of having a good product that's appreciated by nice clients and getting a call from somebody in Alaska that somebody had somehow given them a bottle of my vinaigrette. Because I don't have four in a lot carrying my product. And examples like that where somebody will call me up or email me or send me a note telling me how much they like my products. And that's...
How many products do you have now?
I have 3. I have garlic. I have a red wine.
Which is what we have, yeah.
And a sugar-free citrus, meaning that there's no artificial suspension or sweeteners in there if there's not a sweet product.
Do you have a store finder on your website?
Yes. Well, we have a list of the stores that our products are carried in.
Great. And let's get that website down then.
Yes, that would. And they're also available to order online.
Okay.
www.tezvinaigrette.com. So that would be Neita. S is in Sam, and I spell vinaigrette VINAIGRETTES.com.
Right.
And I have no idea whether that's the right spelling
or not.
It is
the right spelling.
Whatever it's a spelling that'll get you some, and I think you'll find it delicious. And we had just a delicious opportunity to meet you at the Charleston Food and Wine Festival. We enjoyed that. And we also thought the story was something our listeners might be inspired by. I think in one of these days you might be on the Today Show or Ellen DeGeneres' show or something like that. It's just a fascinating story, and it's so...
Oprah, before she's quit.
Yeah, Oprah. So it's so good to hear that you're doing well and that you're successful and that you're having a good time.
Are you going to be at the Fancy Food Show in New York?
I am planning on it. I went for 2 years, and then I skipped last year, but I'm hoping to be there this summer. And I will tell you that I do a lot of work, the Heart Association and Women Heart, and, which is another organization strictly dedicated for women with heart disease around the country. And my products are heart healthy. They're zero trans fat, zero cholesterol, low sodium, low or no sugar, but they taste very flavorful and robust, and a lot of people don't know my story and like that. And they're very flexible. You can use them from salads to we were marinating quail, as you tasted at the Boston Food and Wine Festival, to doing drizzles over steamed asparagus, or if you were doing anything that swims, flies, has hoofs, or goes in the ground, it's fair game for this product. So, and it makes a cute little gift, too, because it looks like a little dessert bottle of wine, and so it ends up being a big hit during the holidays or as a hostess gift. So I really appreciate your coming by my booth. It was a pleasure meeting both y'all. And
yeah,
I hope
y'all also.
Again.
And do let me know if you're going to be at the Fancy Food Show, because we usually cover that.
I will. And, you know, y'all are in Pittsburgh. I've been chatting with the McGinnis sisters, and
they're wonderful.
I'll work with them as well. So at any rate, well, listen, take care. All the best. Let me know when you're in town, and I'll certainly keep in touch with you on New York, and I hope that you have a fabulous year. And
I'm not kidding. I actually sip it from the bottle.
Well, I've heard that before.
Well, thank you again, Nita. So,
all right.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, I think that pretty much wraps it for this week. Yeah. I need to get back to ordering my seeds. We're going to
Oh, you do? Yeah,
we're going to
start. Well, the crocuses are out. They came out before the snow was all gone.
Yeah.
Just a wonderful surprise. I went outside, and thanks to the snow being all over the garden, there's rosemary growing, wintering over. The sage is wintering over.
We hope.
I didn't have a chance to tell you. And I was out in the garden this morning, and I noticed that the parsley is reshooting.
Oh, this is good.
That's coming back. That's coming back too. So lettuce seeds are due to go in the ground very soon, and we will put winter behind us. We'll have spring ahead of us, and a wonderful growing season. And more raspberries, because I pruned the raspberries too, so everything's ready to go and on the menu's little garden. once we get Justin to come along and do a little sod busting for us, and we'll give you further news on how our little city garden is coming along as the program proceeds through the spring and summer. And until next week, same
bye
time.
Bye.
Oops, same time, same place. Do it again.
Bye bye.